civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, good morning, Tribe World. It's Ray here. It's good to have this opportunity to chat, and I hope you're doing very well. Who's that? Who's that interrupting me? Who's that?
Zook lives.
Ah, it's the, who is this? Is this the Guardian?
This is the Guardian.
The Guardian, what are you doing in this day and age? Shouldn't you be with the Chosen?
The Chosen are my followers.
Ah, and what are they following at this time? Are they, how are they coping in this terrible time that this COVID-19?
The Chosen are protected. Chosen is safe. The Chosen are always safe. Zoot leads the lead us. Zoot makes the law. Zoot protects.
Oh, that's good to hear. But Guardian, I was due to speak with Damon this morning, and I suppose you're not going to take any kind of advice from anybody. It's certainly not me. So let me. Let me just try and conjure up another figment of my imagination, as indeed you are, and Harry and the writers. So let me just... Power and Chaos! Who's that? That's Zoot speaking. So if you don't listen to me, listen to Zoot. Go, Guardian! Let Ray speak with Damon! No, good morning. Is that Damon there?
Did
that
work?
Hello, Damon. How are you?
Good, thank you.
It's good. It's nice to hear your voice. And sorry about, and apologies to Danny for my terrible interpretation of Zoot. But it's nice to hear your voice. And now that the Guardian is away and everybody will stop trembling in their shoes, it's a great time to have this time to have a chat with you, Damon. How are you doing, Damon? You're up in Auckland?
Yes, I'm in Auckland. I live in Titirangi, which is a leafy sort of suburb that's in Auckland. And I'm surrounded by bush, and it's beautiful. It's been beautiful weather. It's been fantastic. Summer just hasn't ended here. And yeah, I'm in the bush. I'm surrounded by trees. We have quite a lot of land, which we're very fortunate to have, which means even though we're on lockdown, we can still sort of exercise and run around and do things like that.
And how are you coping with the lockdown? What do you do to keep yourself occupied?
Well, I've been very busy for the last month. So I had been working for Shortland Street, which is a soap opera here in New Zealand, sort of nightly soap opera. And so I worked for them for about 13 years, running the story team. And I stopped my job last year. I decided I was going to freelance and do some different things. I had some plays and film ideas I wanted to work on. So I just recently went back and did some work for them for a month. And so I've actually been really, really busy. And I've been working via Skype and a thing called Microsoft Teams, which is a bit like Skype, every day. And so I've only just stopped for Easter, and production on Shortland Street has stopped. So now we're finished. So now I will actually be able to relax a little more and do what everyone else is doing on lockdown, I suppose, and spend a little bit more time with my family.
That's terrific. And a lot of the tribal fans will know of Shortland Street because it's a very, very popular, iconic title in New Zealand, of course, but it's popular all around the world. And I know many fans enjoy it in England and other countries, and they'll be quite fascinated to know that, as well as your gifts and talents, Damon, as an actor, you write and direct do you have a preference in the, each discipline? Do you prefer acting, directing, or writing?
I like writing and directing. I think that's what I prefer. That's what I spend most of my time doing now. I haven't actually done a lot of directing for a while because I've been so focused on writing, but I would really like to get back to directing. I love it. I love working with actors, and I've missed that part of it. And the part that I've been doing, Shortland Street, the writing is sort of broken into several components. And so there are storylines written where you work in a team who come up with the ideas for the stories, and we write those into a sort of a prose document. And then those are sent out to script writers, and then they turn that into dialogue script. And then that is edited by script editors, and so it all feels like the same show. And then it's produced. And so I've worked very, very intensely on the story generation part of it for the last sort of 13 years. So I've been in that sort of area and not so much in the dialogue. I've written a few scripts and things, but not a lot. So I've been on character and story and Shortland Street, because we create 5 episodes a week. It's very, it's all kind of immersive, and you're completely in that world for a period of time as well. So I've just been working in that reality and in that show for such a long time, and just working on that part. So now that I've left, I really want to just get back to working on script a little bit more and actually working back with actors again. And because that's the other end of the part of it that I love, you know, and I mean, both parts are good, but yeah, I'm looking forward to going back to doing a bit of directing again.
It's interesting, isn't it, that a lot of self-isolation is something us writers live with, really. And you're kind of, I mean, it's I was reflecting the other day that, I mean, I'm so used to working from home, except when we're in production, you know. Obviously, you know, every day you have to be on set and location, but generally I live by myself and I'm self-isolated, and yet in the imagination you can be anywhere in the world through writing, can't you, Damon? I mean, it's wonderful.
Do you get up early? You're one of those early risers, aren't you? Yeah. You're someone who gets up early and writes from quite an early hour, is that right?
Very much so. Then, I mean, I'm up every day about 4:30, 5 o'clock. And it's interesting speaking with you today. You know, I was, we were having a chat with Beth Allen the other day, and yeah, she was saying that, ironically, she was in Shortland Street for about 6 years after the Tribe.
Many of the Tribe actors, lots and lots of them, went on and did Shortland Street, and it was so great because the Tribe had given them all this this training. They're all so good. And so we had all these young actors who were so good and knew exactly what they were doing. And many of them, I mean, Antonia Preble, many of them have gone on to have, really fantastic careers. And I credit a lot of that to you and to the Tribe and the opportunity that they...
That's very nice of you to say, Damon. And it's interesting that Beth was saying she was chatting with a writer at Shortland Street to say it was very difficult for the writer to distinguish between the character and the person. And I have to say that, I believe it or not, it sounds quite weird, I was a little nervous to speak with you this morning because you're the Guardian, you know, and we get a lot of letters, Damon, not only on Facebook, within our different YouTube channels, and a lot of emails, and it's quite extraordinary. I thought, there's not a flaw in my character, because I'm reading all the questions and people are still nervous and frightened of the Guardian. And
I know. Look, it's funny you should say that, Ray. So I was in the UK a few years ago. This was quite a long time ago. I went over after I'd done, was it series 4 of The Tribe? Vanessa Stacey and Jacob Tamuri, who's had an amazing career, by the way. We went over and went to the UK. We were in London for a while. And I went up to Cambridge to visit a friend of mine. And we were spending time with her and her partner at the time and some friends of theirs who were at university there. And I met this young woman. She's probably late 20s or something. And, you know, we're just a group of friends. And she was just very strange around me, very kind of nervous and couldn't. And I tried to sort of connect with her, and everyone else was very friendly, but she was very reserved, and I couldn't kind of work out why. And I thought, this may be just how she is. And then after a little bit, something came up. It must have been there a week or so. It was a few days before this came up, and she clicked, or someone mentioned something about the Tribe. And she suddenly realized that she watched the Tribe a lot, but she hadn't connected that I was the Guardian. And she suddenly went, oh my God, and that was why she'd had this sort of this distrust of me and was really nervous and weird around me. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I had that effect.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
But it's a couple of times.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, it's and Damon, as you're a very creative being, and had you been like that since a child? Had you always wanted to act or be a writer, or what was your childhood like?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was involved in Scouts when I was a kid. My dad was involved in it, and so he got me involved in Cubs and Scouts and things when I was quite young. And I ended up in a gang show, which is like a Scout kind of review show. I think I was probably about 8 or maybe 9, around that age. I know I was pretty young. And in the Scouts at that time, they didn't have girls. Of course, they have girls in Scouts now. But back then, they didn't. So the boys had to play the girls' roles. And so I ended up being the lead ballerina in the ballet part of this gang show. And I think because I was quite small and probably, perfect for the role. Anyway, and I think that's where it sort of started. That's where my sort of passion for performing, I kind of discovered it, that I loved being on stage and that I enjoyed performing. So that was the beginning. And so I did 3 gang shows over the course of the next 3 years. And then I was sort of hooked after that. And I was just looking for any kind of, you know, theatrical thing I could get involved in.
And you have siblings, brothers or sisters, Damon?
Yeah. I've got an older sister and a younger brother. Neither of them are involved in the arts.
They weren't really into it as well.
No, we were all quite different. My brother was into rock climbing and mountaineering and those kind of things. And my sister was into travel. And they both sort of continued in those areas. I was the only one performing, yeah. My brother did a little bit, actually. He did for a little while, but I think he suffered from the fact that I was so into it that I think he got a bit sick of being compared to me.
So. And were you raised up in Auckland, Damon, in the North Island?
Yes. I was born in Wellington. I lived in Wellington until I was 8 or 9, and then we moved to Auckland, and the rest of the time I grew up in Auckland. Yeah. Wow.
And was it difficult to get into the business? I mean, did you find, how did you get into the business?
Well, I got involved with this thing called Northland Youth Theatre, which was an incredible thing that ran for a few years there. It was in Whangarei and was at the, there's a fabulous theatre there called the Captain Bougainville Theatre, and so that was used for productions, and it ran every year. It was a brilliant programme. So at the end of your school year, you would go away to a casting week for a week in Whangarei, and you'd stay for the week, and you'd meet all these other kids, and it was for people aged 16 to early 20s, and so it's quite a broad sort of area. I think the original cutoff was 20, but they sort of were a bit loose on that, and they put on 3 or 4 productions. And so you rehearsed them. You went back to Auckland or back to your home for Christmas, and then you came back in the new year, and then you stayed for about a month and rehearsed a play and then put it on for a week or so and then returned home. And that, for me, was just incredible. I met people that had gone to the New Zealand Drama School, people that were actors for a living, and I suddenly realised that this was something that was actually possible, that I could do this for a job. And once I discovered that, I was sort of hooked. And so then my goal became to get into Te Whakaari, the New Zealand Drama School, which I did after I left school. So I think I did 1 year of they wouldn't take people straight out of school, so I had to do a year of something else. So I worked for a little bit, and I went to the Northern Polytechnic for a year and did a drama course up there. And then as soon as I was eligible, I auditioned for the New Zealand Drama School, which I got into, and did 2 years of training there, and then once that was done, I was just eager to do theatre. So I worked a lot around the country in community theatres, the Court Theatre in Christchurch and the Auckland Theatre Company in Auckland, and where else did I work? And a lot of touring kind of shows and a bit of film and a bit of television and just anything I could get my hands on, really.
Isn't that great? And how did The Tribe come about for you, Damon?
The Tribe, really interesting. I was the oldest cast member. I think I was 29 or about to, yeah, I think 29, 28, 29, which was quite old when you think that the virus was supposed to kill everyone 18 and over. But anyway, I looked youthful, so that was lucky. I'd actually created a play. I devised and directed a play with students at Te Whakaari called Elvis Was a Coconut, which was on. Which was a crazy kind of show about a guy called Elvis who was living in Rarotonga. Anyway, and so we devised the show and we were performing it at this place called the Sunset Palms, which was a Cook Island nightclub. And Jeff Husson came to see it, And I think he had seen me on stage in a few things before that. I'd been in a few plays and various things around Wellington. And he'd seen me on stage, so he knew who I was. But I never knew him. And I was actually, because it was a small production, I was actually taking tickets at the door because we were doing everything. You know, it was one of those plays where, you do the lights and absolutely everything. And I was taking tickets when Jeff came in and he sort of introduced himself to me. And I was kind of like, oh, I didn't know who he was. And I didn't know whether he was sort of legit either because he was saying he was this producer of this company, Cloud9. And I was like, okay. And then he said, look, I really want you to come and audition for this role. I think you'd be perfect for it. And I was like, all right. Okay. I didn't really take him very seriously. And he says, it's the show called The Tribe. And he didn't tell me much else about it. But he said, look, call your agent tomorrow. And I went, okay. And so I called my agent and she said, oh, your script's turned up for you. And she didn't know a lot about it either at the time. I think you'd done one season. This was the beginning of series two, I think. Yeah. So you'd done one season, but she just said, oh, it's an English production company and it's on Channel 4, I think. And Channel 4, yes, Channel 4, was it? Channel 5, sorry, Channel 5, isn't it? Yeah, in the UK. And so I thought, oh, okay, great. And thought, oh, it must be an English accent. So because there was not a lot of other information with the script. And so I just went into her office and put my audition down on tape and I did an English accent. And then I got a phone call and they said, yeah, you got the part. And I was like, what? It just seemed so extraordinary to me because usually you go through a process of auditioning with a bunch of other people. None of this sort of happens in this kind of way. So it was all a little bit weird. And then the next thing I was kind of going out to the production and getting fitted for a costume. And I suddenly realized the scale of the production and I was having a bespoke costume made for me. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Okay, this is a serious production. And I didn't really know about it. And then, of course, I think it was Gavin, who was the wardrobe guy, I asked him, oh, so it's English accents because it's an English show. And he said, oh, no, it's American accents. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, all right, okay, I'll change my accent. So
it's extraordinary that, and for the listeners, Jeff Hutton was a very talented man, a lovely guy, our executive in charge of production. And I remember Jeff showed me the audition tape, Damon, and I knew instinctively within 5 seconds, I thought, wow, that's the one, you know. And I was very taken with your kind of talent and your gifts as an actor. And The Guardian was a very important role. I mean, a lot of people, you know, within the kind of Tribe fandom, even to this day, Damon, even when they, you know, we're discussing before we recorded the three books, and we can't get any spoilers or give anything away, but The Guardian features even in the books and within that kind of mystical, you know, kind of that tribal universe is such a central role. And it really was to, you know, to kind of metaphorically examine religion, spirituality, prophets, whatever you call it, you know. And so your role really brought it to life. Did you enjoy playing The Guardian, Damon?
I did enjoy playing The Guardian. I think one of the great things, most enjoyable things for me was I was a big fan of British sci-fi when I was a kid, and I loved things like Doctor Who, and there was a sort of a campiness to those kind of shows, the sort of not taking themselves too seriously, that I sort of saw in The Tribe, and I loved that about The Guardian, and playing that role, that there was room for a little bit of comedy at times, even though he was quite sort of twisted, and I really enjoyed that, and so I did enjoy playing that character. I was a little bit unsure, I think, at the beginning about whether he really believed what he was saying or whether he was just using it to manipulate people. And I think at times there was it went through both things, I think. I think there were times when he used the whole Zoot thing just to control people. Yeah. And I think the times he did actually grew to genuinely believe what he was saying, which I think is true of many of those people who've set themselves up as prophets and cult leaders.
And that's what I think you brought to all those layers and made him real. I mean, not just a scary character. I, like you, Damon, I grew up in England and I used to hide behind the couch in the city when the Daleks came on Doctor Who and And in fact, one of my heroes when I was a little lad was a man called Mervyn Aisman, who was one of the iconic writers on Doctor Who, who ended up working for me when I was at the BBC and some of our other Cloud Nine shows. So it was wonderful, really. But I've got some questions, Damon, so bear with me. I'm always, the tribal brothers and sisters always get mad at me because I hog the cast for myself. So bear with me, and I'm just going to come into these.
The character from Doctor Who that the Guardian reminded me of was the Master. I don't know if you remember that character. He was a bearded.
Do you know that was partly the inspiration. I mean, it's and that's well spotted. I mean, that's
I was always kind of like the Master, and I always tried to play it a little bit like that, maybe with a little bit more humour. But yeah.
Yeah, no, and you certainly didn't know. I'm going to get my glasses on. Bear with me. So this is from Kevin Bailey. Good morning, Kevin. The Guardian had some pretty profound prophetic visions into the future with the return of the prophet Zoot. But do you think his character could have adapted with the latest technological advances to which the Technos reintroduced? Or, bear with me, or would have his vision bring... more power and chaos using new technologies. Also, did you have a favorite costume out of the Guardian's wardrobe? So, quite a two-part question there. How do you think the Guardian would have adapted to some of the other technologies, Damon? And
I could certainly see how it would have helped him. But I also think he was quite rigid in his thinking. So I don't know that he would have been flexible enough to have adopted the new technologies. I think you had an extraordinary leader in Ram as well, Tom Hearn's character. So I don't know that he would have been happy to have worked with anybody else either. So I suspect the Guardian was a little bit old school and preferred to lean on religion and that sort of faux religion rather than technology. That would be my thinking.
And did you have a favorite costume, Damon, of the Guardian's wardrobe?
When the Guardian first appeared, he was wearing this kind of woolen kind of robes, and they were pretty cool. But then I got upgraded to this sort of David Bowie kind of leather jacket and tight pants and platforms. And that costume was great. It was very 70s kind of glam, and I really liked that costume. It was a bit of a nightmare at times to do physical stuff in. I had to do a fight sequence, and I was wearing the platform and the tight pants, and I had to do this sort of crazy kind of windmill kind of kick thing that Sam, our choreographer, had choreographed, and I ripped my pants. Tore them in the middle of the take, which they still used. I don't think it actually turned up. You couldn't tell. But yeah, I remember ripping the pants and also just about, you know, going over on the platforms. But the costume was fantastic.
That's amazing. And I've got one from Richard Weston. Good morning, Richard. This is interesting. Do you think that the Guardian had mental health issues? If so, did you ever get an understanding on what caused his extreme behavior or his past? That's an interesting question, Richard.
Yeah, I think he probably did. He seemed deeply insecure to me. I think there was, you know, maybe he'd been bullied when he was younger, certainly felt something like that. But, you know, he's kind of a little bit, I don't know. Yeah, I definitely think there's issues there. It was almost like Charles Manson at times. Not quite, you know, obviously not as extreme, but somewhere in that sort of territory of being some sort of social misfit and definitely insecure.
Yes, yes. It's interesting, really. The tribe was a terrific, through Zoot, the thematic about, you know, young people building a better world and the Malrats. Damon, I always say, I was a big Disney fan, and you as a writer might be interested, if you may know already, but in Pinocchio, the Jiminy Cricket was introduced as a character of conscience to give some feeling, some depth there. So the mole rats, all the, conflict within the mole rats, surrounding that was the Chosen, obviously, and Zootism, and that's, you know, to not sanitize the world we inhabit. It was very important to show rebellious youth. And so I agree with you. I mean, I think that, I'd always thought in my subtext that, you know, going to school, somebody like Damon, the Guardian's character, would look to somebody like Zoot or Martin, as he was before he took on the incarnation of the bringer of power and chaos, you know, and just angry youth, you know, just rebelling against the previous generations. And with that, I think if people are insecure or once they can have that profound effect and manipulate, as you said, it's like the Manson thing, it becomes quite frightening, really. And, you get to the point where you become sensitized and you lose what's right and wrong. And then it does go into another realm, doesn't it, really?
Absolutely. And also with characters, the most interesting thing is their flaws, always. And it's always the most interesting thing to play as well, when you can look at where someone's insecurities lie, or, you know, what's actually flawed in a character. So, and I think that was one of the nice things with The Guardian. There were plenty of flaws to delve right into.
Yes, I've got one here from David Cullen. David Cullen says, good morning, David. So loved The Guardian, probably the best villain on the tribe.
Thank you.
Would love to know what you would have liked to have happened with the character after his brief return at the end of season 5. Just with that, David, I'll just confine that to, what you would personally like, I suppose, because we do pick up, obviously, in the books for the equivalent of seasons 6, 7, and 8. So, Damon, if you ignore all that stuff, I mean, what would you personally, as an actor, would have liked to have seen happen? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, of course, I'd want him to take back control. As an actor, I mean, the most fun bit was when the Guardian had his office in the mall, and that was great. I mean, as an actor, you feel like you've arrived on the show when you get your own set. And as soon as I had, you know, my own set, that was just great. It was like, oh, now I feel relaxed and feel like this is an important character. So he got kicked out of the mall, you know. It's like the mall's the central anchor for everyone in that show. So, of course, I would have wanted him to get the mall back.
That's a good I've got another one from Sophia Stu, I think it is, S-C-H-U. Excuse me. Hello, Damon. I adored your performance as a Guardian. Thanks to you, he's my all-time favorite villain. While shooting The Tribe, you were older than the majority of the cast. How was filming with younger colleagues? And also, how did you feel portraying a teenage cult leader while in reality being an adult? Zoot be praised. Stay safe and keep the dream alive. So that's you've touched on that a little bit, Damon. When you said you were, what, 28, 29? Not too much older, really. I mean, but did you feel that you were older when you were during the cast?
I did a bit. I felt, also, I think the cast had a year or they did a whole season together. So they were very connected. And a lot of people were living in the cast house as well. So they were very connected with each other. And so I did feel a little bit of an outsider because I was guest cast, especially to begin with. I think later I sort of might have become core cast, but I was definitely guest cast. So you always feel as a guest that you're a little bit outside the kind of core group. And with them being a bit younger, I sort of felt that too. But still, they were such great actors and great people. And I became good friends with a lot of them. And the people that I did a lot of scenes with as well were the ones I really got to know. Antonia Preble, for example, her and I did Trudy. We did a lot of scenes together. So I spent quite a bit of time with her. She's fantastic. I mean, and these people, I mean, there was a wide age sort of range too. I think some of the youngest when I was there was sort of 11 or 12. And then others were sort of more 18, sort of 19, I suppose, like Dwayne and Caleb. And they were all very mature because they'd been involved in this production. That a lot of them were living away from home. And I made some really good friendships. Caleb and I spent quite a lot of time together after the show. We used to hang out quite a lot. But he, of course, lives in Alaska now, I think.
Up in Northern, in a place called Churchill, actually. And would you just speak with Caleb soon? So I'll send him your best. And
please do.
I will indeed, Damon. I've got an interesting one from Sabine. And and at the Valre Jungbuk. So sorry, Sabine, I can never pronounce your name. Sabine's a familiar name. She's been a big Tribe fan for many, many years, and won a costume a while back, and that was the Guardian's Robes. So Sabine says, hi, Damon. Something I've been wondering since I won the Guardian's Robes years ago, with how heavy those robes are, did your costume ever make it difficult to do certain scenes? Or did you get used to the costume's weight after a while? And Damon, on that, we've got the Guardian's Robes in storage, but we had doubles, and we did a big competition for Tribe World, and Sabine won it, and she won the Guardian's Robe. So it was quite a big thing to prize, having the hero's costume, so to speak. So were they heavy?
Yeah, it was made of pure wool, so the actual costume was relatively heavy, but it sort of flowed down, and it wasn't too bad. It was a little bit restrictive, but it didn't really bother me too much. The tricky thing was in the first scenes where the Guardian appears, he's wearing this mask, which is kind of a bit like a fencing mask, which is a wire front and then a sort of a hooded back. And as he leads the Chosen over the hills, I think, into Wellington, he's wearing this thing, and the robes combined with the mask, it was very hard to see where I was going. So although you're supposed to be this scary, you know, cult leader leading the cult over the hill, it was hard not to trip up, which would have looked really silly. And I actually think I think in one of the blooper reels you see us walking over the hill and then I like trip or something. So
I remember that actually, but there's one on the beach where you're walking and you've got this troop of the Chosen behind following, and you're walking towards the as the tide's coming in, it looked like you're going to walk right into.
And then I swerve off. That's right.
And join Zoot, you know. I mean, you think like that. No, it's incredible. I'm just going to move over to another, such as our Instagram, some of our Instagram questions. Bear with me. So this is from Tay Torbay on Instagram. Question for podcast for Damon. What was your inspiration to get into character for the Guardian? Did you draw on any?
I think that comes back to the Doctor Who stuff that we were talking about before with the Master. The Master was definitely my inspiration, and Doctor Who, I mean, that was how I kind of, you know, approached it largely, I think. And then, of course, I guess you reference other religious cult leaders, you know, like the Charlie Manson's and those kind of crazy, insane people. But I always want to make sure that you didn't. I mean, sometimes I worried that I went a little bit too far into the psychopath territory. It was a kids' series, and I think there's something about scaring young people. And I loved being scared myself as a kid watching things, but I never wanted them to be too crazy. So it was. I like those moments where you could pull it back from, you know, too insane, and be a bit lighter. But yeah, I think Doctor Who and the Master would be my main.
You know, it's interesting, David, because you also brought a degree of vulnerability to the role, which I thought was terrific. And you could then believe why somebody like Tai San would have found sympathy, or, you know, kind of recognizing and responding to that vulnerability. And that's a testament to your gifts as an actor. It's not easy to bring those layers, you know. And it wasn't just that one-dimensional psychopathic, sociopathic element that, you know, you did, you know, and I think that that's why the characters resonated. And the fear is that it's the fear of that kind of utter belief in what you were doing, you know, which is really scary. I mean, it's quite interesting. And to this day, you know, as I say, the... you know, so many of the cast are frightened of that character, but and not because of just because of the intensity and the kind of I suppose a zealot, you know, kind of conviction of it, which is pretty scary for extremists, you know. And so it's interesting. So I got one from Matthew Jones. Good morning, Matthew. Again, Matthew is a regular Tribal fan who's been with the show for years and years and years. So love The Guardian, hands down, one of my faves. Can you tell us any stories from the show we might not have heard before? By that, I suppose any thing sticks out, Damon, in any funny parts or sad parts or anything that on and off set that might stick out in your memories?
I think the strongest thing for me would be the friendships, I suppose, that I made, and people like Jacob, you know, like Jacob Tamuri, who I became good friends with through the filming of it. Those connections with people that I otherwise wouldn't have met. And Jacob and I, and Vanessa, we went to the UK following The Tribe and spent some time over there. And Jacob and I toured around in Italy together, which was a lot of fun. And Vanessa and I spent quite a bit of time together in London.
What did you do in England, Damon? What were you doing? You were out there working or just touring?
I was trying to get work. So because The Tribe was popular at the time and it was still on air when we got there, I had a shot at having a bit of an acting career over there. And I did get cast in a TV series called Urban Gothic, which was a sort of precursor to Black Mirror. I think it's the same people made it. And so I ended up doing an episode of that, which was a lot of fun. And tried to get other work, but I think I was probably there about 6 months or maybe a little longer. But I actually found it quite difficult to get work as a New Zealander in the UK and decided to come home and refocus on more writing and directing stuff.
Yes, and going through Italy with Jacob, that would have been interesting. And did you enjoy that?
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah, that was fantastic. I had a friend over there who was a model, so he was living in Milan and he'd been working as a model. And so we went and stayed with him and got a little bit of insight into that world, which was fascinating. And then we went to Florence and we stayed in Milan and went to Florence and Rome and caught trains around and things. We were there for a couple of weeks, I think. It was great. It was really, really good.
It's a lovely country. It's a shame they've really been struggling in this time with the virus, haven't they? That they've got hit really bad and hard. It's a real tragedy.
It is.
Yeah. It's really sad. And, of course, Jacob has done tremendously well, hasn't he? A lot of the
Tom Hardy's stuntman,
that's right. And a tremendous guy well done to him. And
incredible hard worker and incredibly focused, Jacob.
Gemma Wood has asked a segue into a question, Damon, from Gemma Wood. Good morning, Gemma. Hi, Damon. Out of all the people you work with in The Tribe, who did you really get on well with, or was everyone scared of you? Laughs out loud.
I don't think people were scared of me. I hope not. Who did I get on? I got on very well with Jeff Husson. He was incredible. He was the one who gave me the role in the first place, and he also helped me into directing. He was the one who invited me to come back and direct. So Jeff was fantastic. I really connected with Caleb. We did a lot of martial arts together. And Sam, who was the fight choreographer, Caleb, he actually was incredible, Sam. He took a lot of the cast in his own time and taught us how to do various fight choreography and actual martial arts stuff, which was great. So I trained with him for quite a while, which was a lot of fun, and Caleb. Jacob, of course, I was very close to, same with Vanessa. Vanessa Stacey, we became good friends as well. So, there were a lot of people. Wardrobe people were fantastic. I remember them really well. I still see some of them around and still work in the industry now. It was a really great team. And I think credit to you, Ray, because you really created a family feeling with cast and crew. And there was such a great spirit on that show. And people enjoyed their jobs. They loved going to work. They loved working on it. You had such brilliant creative talent right across the board.
David, thank you for that. it's important that, you know, I've often said that, when you cast somebody, you cast them not just for their talent, but you want, it's the spirit, it's people that want to join you on this journey. And I'm proud of the whole cast and crew, and undoubtedly there was a lot of talent there, but fundamentally, really, like tremendous human beings, Damon, and yourself included, you know, who you know, really pushed the envelope and were sincere in what we're aspiring to do. And so I think it was very, very special. And yeah, like a family, as you say, and we were a tribe within a tribe. And that's terrific. I've got one from George Jones, who actually, George, good morning, George. I think that's the same George that did a podcast once and interviewed me. I hope you're keeping well, George, and thank you for your question for Damon. And the question, Damon, is, what was your favorite scene you ever filmed? Did you have a favorite scene?
That's a good question. There was a scene, I can't remember exactly what happened. There was a scene with Jacob and I where the Guardian was talking to Luke in his office, and I got to do some crazy rant. I can't remember what that was. I can't remember the exact details of it, but I remember that being a lot of fun. We had a particularly good director. She was a woman from Australia. I can't remember her name, but she was really good. There were a lot of good directors on the show, but she was particularly good. And I can remember enjoying filming that scene. It was one of those crazy days where we did like 10 scenes in a row or something. Yeah. And you get, the good thing about doing those days is you get into the rhythm of it and you really start to go into the world, because you're not just doing one scene. Sometimes I think with filming, you know, you turn up on the day, you have to do one scene and then you go home, and you don't really get into it. But when you have a whole load stacked together like that, yes, it becomes immersive. And I remember enjoying that particular day.
Yeah, I mean, the discipline of fast turnaround television is extraordinary. And we were talking, you're mentioning some of the cast were very disciplined and talented.
Right, and Antonia Preble just being, you know, I can remember doing an argument scene with her. It was Trudy in The Guardian, and we were having an argument, and she was so good. My God, she was good. And I was just keeping on top of it. Like, I mean, because the thing often is you had a short amount of time to learn your lines, so they're only just in your mind anyway. And she was so fast, and she was so on me, and, you know, it was great. Really, really good. She was probably only about 16 at the time.
Just extraordinary. And I've got an interesting one from Kathy Hyman. What does Damon think that The Guardian would say to its followers about our current circumstances?
Ah, well, that's interesting, isn't it? Something self-centered, probably, and Zoot-related. I mean, the thing about The Guardian, I think, is that he always twisted things to his own advantage. So he would be one of those leaders, I think, that would do the same in this current kind of world, probably try and shift himself away from blame and responsibility and manipulate any vulnerabilities so that he could better his own tribe and his own situation, unfortunately. And I think, unfortunately, I think there are some people in the world, some leaders that have done this in our current situation. And I think the best leaders are the ones that are genuinely trying to confront honestly the situation we're in and help as many people as possible.
Yes, thank you for that. Now we've got one from our YouTube channel from Jared Roper. Good morning, Jared. Why do you think The Guardian idolized Zoot and created The Chosen? I mean, and what was the hardest part of becoming The Guardian? I suppose the second part of that question is easier, because the writers had, you had to deliver what the writers had written. But
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Own thoughts. I mean, did you clearly maybe had a subtext you understood that probably The Guardian idolized, I mean, a role model. He looked at Martin / Zoot as a role model, and that's probably why he idolized him. Or, as you say, maybe he was kind of manipulating his followers, Zoot's followers, kind of using it opportunistically, really, for his own.
To some degree. But I think there must have been, you always want to personalize things. And I sort of feel that The Guardian must have had some relationship with Zoot beforehand where he looked up to him, yes, surely. And that's just sort of got bigger through, the events that have followed. And the second part, in terms of what was it, the preparing? Yeah, I think in terms of preparing, yes, of course you have to. I mean, the interesting thing about working on a series like The Tribe is that you get your scripts and you find out what you do next. So to begin with, everything ahead is dark. You don't know what the future is. You don't know what's going to happen for your character. You just get a few pages to try and work out who this person is and build some backstory from. And then as it's revealed to you, as you get more and more scripts, you go, oh, that's what that was about. Oh, that's what the character, yeah. You know, so the constant revelation and a deepening of your understanding. So I think as you play a role like this, the more you do it, the more you understand about who the person is. And if you could go back, you possibly would play some of the earlier stuff differently. But that's just the way it is on any show like this, because it's a peeling back of the layers.
Yes, no, that's a good and that's well done on that. That's very good. I've got one from Raymond Winger, I think. Good morning, Raymond. That's a good name. Rays and sunshine, no doubt. And nice. Thank you for your question, Raymond. Did you find any certain scenes like the ones obsessing over Tyson difficult or challenging to do?
Yeah, actually, I suppose, yeah, some of those Tyson scenes, yeah, there were a little bit there that were challenging. I guess it's always about getting straight in your head exactly why someone is doing something. And as soon as you get, you know, you have to play, you have to choose as an actor what you're playing. And I think I wasn't entirely clear to begin with about the Tyson stuff, but that stuff was interesting. But I made a choice, and that's what you've got to do as an actor, and then you just follow through on that.
That's great. And then an interesting thing with your kind of directing elements, that then you on season 5 directed a lot of the parallel units, a lot of the tribal community may be unaware of that. And so did you ever direct yourself, so to speak?
No, I didn't direct myself. But when I came back, it was odd because I got to be the parallel director, parallel unit director, which was fantastic because we had our own little studio where we shot all that stuff with RAM and the technos and all of those kind of things and a lot of location content. And I did do 1 week where Murray Keane was sick and I got to sort of fill in and do main unit as well, which was really great as well. I enjoyed that too. And then at the end of the series, when I returned as the guardian, just for a day or two of shooting, it was the parallel unit that I had been directing. So the whole crew I'd been directing with, I was now acting with. And that was really interesting because we had, Paul Murphy directed it, who was the other parallel unit director. And so he directed it, but it was because we shared that unit. We exchanged roles. And so it was weird because it was now suddenly I was the actor and the crew and the DOP, Sean O'Donnell, who was fantastic, and the rest of them, they're all the crew that I'd been directing, and now I was acting. And I remember finding that transition very odd.
Very, very interesting. And now this is a really difficult name to say. It's whatever. It's GXLDXSWXRTHY. So from either Scandinavia or the planet Zeus, I don't know where. It's a very interesting name. And yeah. Forgive me if I can't say it. I'm so sorry. But what was your favorite part about portraying the Guardian?
I think the fun stuff, you know, like being the scary guy was fun. He had a lot of status, and it's always fun to play someone with a lot of status. And someone a little bit deranged.
I think it is. It's always, I mean, I think we had a chat with Tom the other day, and he was saying that playing the villain is so much more fun and fulfilling than the hero is.
Every time. And it's funny when you meet actors who don't want to be portrayed in a bad light. Yeah. And some actors are like this, usually young actors. And it's funny because as a director, I take them aside and say, you're missing the point here. This showing the worst is the best when you're an actor. Showing your flaws, showing all of the ugly sides of things. That is the fun. That is the joy of acting. You don't want to look good. You want to show the worst sides of humanity in a way. The more vulnerable and the more you can put out there, the more fun you can have and the more accessible what you're doing will be. So,
you know, within the soul is that capacity to go to the dark side, which I suppose is why, to coin a phrase like the Star Wars, have been so popular. I mean,
Darth Vader is the most well-known character, I imagine, from Star Wars. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, the Emperor and Darth Vader, and it's perennial, really. And I've got one from Blue Eyed Babe. Good morning, Blue Eyed Babe. I hope your blue eyes are keep it blue, you know. But nice to hear from you, and thank you for your question. Was there another character you would have liked to have played in the tribe?
My simple answer to that is no, because like we were just saying, I think the villain is the most fun. I think Ram would have been an interesting character to play, but that's just playing another villain. I think Luke's character was an interesting character too, because he played that that difficult role of he was between, he could go either way. He could either go for the good side or the bad side, and to be caught between the two worlds, I think, is an interesting dilemma for a character, and that would have been an interesting thing to explore.
And Damon, it's interesting that you with your talents and gifts as a writer, and currently I've been doing storylines, and that's interesting. Does that come, is that perspiration or inspiration? I mean, do you waken up at 3 o'clock in the morning and or how do you go about your writing when you're writing? Are you able to just sit down if you're starting at 9 o'clock and do it, or do you procrastinate? And how do you go about that? It's an interesting process, isn't it?
Well, I as a storyliner, I was working in a team. So every Monday we would meet at 9:30 and then we'd have until 6 that day to work out the stories for the week. So it's very much of there's a time pressure, and you don't have time for writer's block. You just have to get on and come up with something. And in terms of where the inspiration comes from, it always comes from character. So you always start with who are the characters and what are the flaws and what are the desires of those people. And you get more out of, it's always about what they want and what's the obstacle and what are their flaws and what do they need to learn and what's the worst thing that could happen to them is often a question I ask myself with characters for finding story. And I think if you focus too much on plot, I think that's where I get a bit lost. And in terms of waking up in the night, the times I wake up in the night is usually when I've already started to write a story and then something about it isn't working, feeling right. And then I wake up at 3 a.m. and it'll be playing on my mind and I won't be able to go back to sleep until usually what happens is I come up with some solution. I find there's something that's worked in the back of my brain and I'm like, oh no, that's what needs to happen. But it's about feeling your way in the dark, I think, writing.
Yeah, it's an interesting process. I mean, I have a love-hate thing with it, you know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, living with the blank page is a nightmare for me sometimes. And I think, and it's like a self-inflicted nervous breakdown. I mean,
but it's something. Why am I doing this again to myself?
Yeah, and I keep saying, well, why am I doing this? And my wife would be saying, look, why are you doing this? Because I'd be anguishing and pacing around and with that kind of manic and temperance, almost like The Guardian in many ways. And I'd be saying, I love it, I need to do this. But I mean, I love it until I start it. Then I keep procrastinating, Damon. I'm terrible. I always put it off and I need a deadline, you know.
There's nothing on the deadline. I think that's the way to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Also, the thing with writing is it's great when you've done it.
You feel
really great when it's done. But the doing of it is nothing but hard work. It's hard.
It is really, and I'm always in awe of anybody, and I love this brotherhood, a sisterhood in our industry. I mean, I love anybody that can fill the blank page, you know. And so many people are critical, and it takes no talent to point a finger and criticize, you know. But I really do. I love writers. I love that somebody can fill that blank page, and that's the creative process. And there's obviously a creative process in all other elements, but they're interpreting something somebody's created and bringing that creativity in a subsidiary form. But it's a fascinating process.
It's always with the writer, isn't it? And that's where it all stems from, that initial inspiration. Which brings me to a question for you, Ray. What was the inspiration for The Tribe? Do you know where that came from?
Yeah, very much so, Damon, and that's a good question. I mean, I grew up in the 60s and came of age in the hippie days, and you know, with, influenced by the music of the Beatles, particularly John Lennon, with the Vietnam War happening, and really I just became intrigued. I mean, I was young and idealistic, I suppose, you know, where I believed that the previous generations had screwed up, and that I couldn't understand the war in Vietnam. You know, young people being drafted, sent away. I could understand the reason for the Second World War. You know, that was a just war. But also just music and expressing oneself and free love and flower power. And you know, it was just an amazing time to grow up. And so I was always intrigued with that. Also, I'm quite interested in indigenous cultures. And I speak a bit of Native American Indian, like Apache, which is not as good as German or French, I have to say, when you're in Europe. But so just I like the markings and I like the looks and I like the culture. And so I had always wanted to really, you know, kind of have young people with no adults to guide, rule or protect them to really, you know, be let loose and to see what they could do, you know, and a vehicle to explore themes of self-reliance, social justice, technology. And that's why we interwove. You mentioned Tom and the kind of technos earlier, that like virtual reality and all of these elements. And your character, the Guardian, through Zoot, was an element to really show how religions come into being. And you know, I could imagine 1,000 years from now that the parables, the stories, when it's handed down, would have, you know, for the Guardian and, you know, the disciples, all of this. It's just quite fascinating you know, and different ideologies. And yeah, so it's and it was a difficult one to get away, Damon. You know, nobody could see it. All the broadcasters thought I was crazy. And it, wow. And it was only Channel 5. You know, we had to finance a lot of it ourselves. And because, you know, they pigeonholed it. It's either a children's series, a teen series. And I always thought it would find a bigger audience. And indeed it did. Mm-hmm. And I thought that if we could be, you know, truthful and keep the integrity of that, it could find an audience and they would emotionally connect. And indeed they have. They've been tremendously loyal. And so thank you for that question. And sorry to kind of take away. I'm supposed to be the. I put my interviewer's hat on now from a tweet from Chad Hawkins. Good morning, Chad. Do you ever think you would be recognized as the most memorable and evil bad guy in the series? And then a part two of that, which of your castmates did you have a crush on? That's maybe something you can't discuss. And then the last part of the question, are you a method actor? It sure seemed like it when you played The Guardian. Interesting. Three parts there.
What was the first part again?
First part, did you ever think you would be recognized as the most memorable and evil bad guy in the series?
No, I didn't. I definitely didn't think that at all. Yeah, I mean, you never kind of know how big the role's going to be. I think initially I thought I was on the show for a couple of weeks, so I was quite surprised when it sort of grew into what it did. Obviously, you had a vision for that, Ray, but I didn't realise. And then, yeah, I mean, I kind of, as an actor, you can't help but feel like, you know, when the next tribe comes in and Ram came in and the technos, I thought, oh, they're the new thing and they're the new villain. That villain will be bigger and badder. And I suppose for some viewers, Ram might be the character that they respond to more than the Guardian. So I guess it's just a matter of individual choice there. But no, I didn't anticipate that at all. In terms of the crush, well, no, not really. I mean, I think for me, I was a little bit older coming in, so most of the cast were quite a lot younger than me, so a crush wasn't really something that was on the cards. So I don't really have a crush on the show, unfortunately. Lots of attractive women, though. And then what was the third part?
Are you a method actor?
I'm a method. No, I'm not a method actor, but not at all. But I think there are bits of the method that I suppose people use. I mean, I think with the method, the thing for me is the method, a lot of it is drawing on outside experiences, things that you've, you know, like emotional recall. I'm getting into acting talk now, but those kind of things that are outside the experience of the moment that you're experiencing now, for me. So, you know, trying to remember when your dog died and how you felt doesn't really have much about the scene you're in right now. So what I try and do is immerse myself in the scene that I'm in at the time and act off the other person in the scene or people in the scene with you. And if, and one of the great things that I learned early on is that you get your performance from the other person. So you're not concentrating yourself, you're concentrating on them and on giving to them and your connection with them. And that takes your focus off yourself and allows you to open up and be kind of honest. So I think the hardest times to act are when you have to do a scene for whatever reason, there isn't another performer there. There isn't another actor, another person you can connect with. But I find if you look into someone else's eyes and you respond to how you feel towards them, you access the truth in yourself. So that's probably the method I would use.
That's good advice to anybody aspiring to come into the business. And I have to say, Damon, I mean, you know, you are a very talented man and a very gifted man and a tremendous actor. And you brought that Guardian to life. You know, although, you know, I, Harry, the writers we would write for the Guardian, I certainly had the storylines. You know, it's you guys bring it together. And so well done. And I think you did a tremendous job and inspired many, many people and frightened them as well, I have to say, me included. You know, I used to come into the office and sometimes want to hide by my couch. I thought, oh my God, you know, when I thought that, it's very bizarre, but, and that's a testament to your talent. And so Damon, our hour has passed by so fast and it just flies by. I was just coming back to our current situation. You know, I often ask members of the cast within the podcast that, you know, that we have a collective conscience now, right now, although the world is going through what we're all going through. We're all kind of faced in this surreal, it's almost like we're living an episode of The Tribe, but some very frightened people, some very anxious people. And do you have anything that you'd like to say in that regard? I mean, that philosophically, that they might take comfort? I mean, to take it one step at a time or whatever, you know, how do you deal? Are you an anxious person?
I don't think I am. I think at the moment, the main thing is being with family and being with those you love and seeing the positives in this. I mean, obviously there's a lot of pain in the world and there's a lot of negative things going on, but also this is an opportunity for us to reconnect with each other and ground ourselves and remember what is important and also reflect on some of the struggles that the previous generations have been through. We've been through a very, very lucky period where, by and large, in the Western world anyway, we've seen a lot of peace and we've had a lot of things. And a lot of those things are off the back of sacrifices that previous generations have made. And so we can take solace from that, and I think we can sit back and contemplate where we're at and think about what we want moving forward.
Yeah, no, I think that's good advice, and it is. It's like the history of the future, really. I mean, to look forward, you've got to look back, and as you rightly say, you can draw inspiration from the amazing kind of resilience of the human condition. I mean, it's you know, I woke up today, Damon, and you're almost, I mean, it's interesting, you become sensitized to matters, and it becomes normalized, you know, where I think today I'm not going to go out, I can't go out. I mean, it's normal for me now, and I know I always joke about it, it's the toilet paper is my new gold, you know, what is the value, because the shops are running out of toilet paper, you know, and they're limiting it to two rolls, so an achievement for me is, if I can get two rolls of toilet paper, life is good. You know, it's a great day. And it's become normal.
You love around you and you can feed yourself and you can look after yourself. You know, it's those important things. I mean, I'm a bit of a sports fan and I also like movies and things like that. But it's interesting at the moment, sports and celebrity culture and all those things just don't seem so important. No. You know, and it's interesting for those things to be put into perspective.
Yes, no, and I agree with you. I mean, I think it's good to look at the positive really, and for those anxious, I mean, it's good to talk and to not be frightened to say that you're struggling or you're frightened, but as Simon said, to draw the positives, because this is a chance to pause and reflect and to be with the ones you love and to think of the ones you love and to get in tune and again, that cliche, it's not the storm you encounter, it's how you set your sails, that not to feed the imagination really, because again, in Apache Native American culture, fear makes the wolf bigger, you know, so fear is an oppressive emotion, and anxiety is a good thing, keeps us safe, but if it goes a bit extreme and out of control, like the Guardian's philosophies were good, you know, but when he becomes a bit extreme, it becomes frightening, I think that's good advice, to be with the ones you love, and if you can't be with the ones you love, then love the ones you're with. Stephen, CrossFit Stills and Nash. I'm showing my age now.
I'm a fan of Crosby, Stills, Nash.
Stephen Stills. If you can't be with the ones you love, then love the ones you're with. And that's a nice way of it. Well, Damon, it's been an absolute joy having this chat, and I appreciate very much your time. And on behalf of all those in Tribe World, I'd like to thank you for your time and for taking the time to have a chat. And I know it will mean a lot. And I look forward to catching up with you. I look forward to catching up with you for a glass of wine on the vineyard when I get back to NZ.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So to all yous and all in Tribe World, you take good care of yourself. Keep safe. Keep positive. Hey, Damon, wash your hands. To take it one step at a time, and all will be well. So until the next time, you keep the dream alive. And thank you very much. And thank you, Damon.
No, thank you.
All the best.